great.
Hi, someone just joined us.
Hope Spotterbush.
Hi, Hope. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Hope. We're just talking to James about the Green Jobs Conference you're talking about in February.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the one in, the one in Washington? We'll be there. It's a good conference. There's two, probably, I say there's two really, well, there's actually three really good conferences to go to. Certainly the Brownfields Conference, which will be next spring. That's going to be in Philadelphia. And that really is important. So just about everybody on every side of the Brownfields activity is at that one.
Hi, someone just joined us?
Rebecca Roseville, Cochise College.
Rebecca, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Rebecca was at the, you were at the Alexandria workshop, weren't you, last
yes.
August? Yeah. That's a great one, isn't it?
It was.
We always,
what was the one in Philly called again? The Brownfields?
It's just called Brownfields 2011, and that's EPA's national conference.
Gotcha.
That's very important, and the reason that is there's someone, all the job training and all the Brownfield people are there, and every segment of Brownfields is there. You have the bankers and the insurance people and the finance people, and then you have the techies who are cleaning up, and they've got all the instruments that you need to detect and characterize the Brownfields and clean them up, and then you've got a lot of remediation companies, and then you've got the job training people. They're there, and you have a lot of people representing the stakeholders. So you've got stakeholder groups, which are, of all those groups, the most fun and the most interesting are the stakeholder groups, because you get people who are really activists, and they're really into this, and they're bringing their information to the table also. And so it's really great the way that works out.
Mike, maybe in your notes from this session, you can put a link. You can put the link in there to their website.
That'd be a great idea. I'll do that. In fact, I'll put the link to. There's three conferences. One is Brownfield. Of course, we would say the most important one is the one in Alexandria, and that's by invitation only to all the grantees and people who are participating in the PLC and alumni grantees. And what do we have, Glo? About 100? Did you want to?
Last year we had 120. That included all of those people that Mike just mentioned, but then we also. Hi, who just joined us?
Danielle Dallas, St. Nick's Alliance.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Along with the grantees, current and past grantees, there are also several people from EPA headquarters there, and all 10 of the regional reps are there. So it's a good chance for everybody to network with each other, network with EPA. It's a great conference.
Hope, did you go to? You were there, weren't you?
No, I haven't been there, no.
Okay, you have to come this next year. It's a great workshop because everyone, past and current and some future, attend.
Well, you said that's for grantees only, though, right?
Well, not if you're part of the PLC. You can also come. We're going to invite you if you're a PLC member.
Nice, but we're not allowed out of district travel right now.
Oh, well.
But if we get the grant, then I guess it's written into the grant, and then
there
we go.
Everyone that gets the grant, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the only way we'd get to go.
Someone just joined us. Who joined us, please?
Jean Marie Crockett, Santa Fe Community College.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jean.
Well, hopefully, in fact, it's perfect timing. We usually do that, the annual Brownfields workshop, which is our just all the grantees and PLC participants and the alumni. We do that in August, and this will segue into some of the things we're going to talk about today. But it'll be perfect timing for those who to get the grantees. The question came up this week, the schedule and what's happening to the schedule. And Joe mentioned basically they're typical of the EPA. They were supposed to by now have had the RFP out. It's not out. officially, and it won't be released for about 3 weeks. So we're looking at the official RFP coming out probably about mid-November. The submission date, whether they extend that because they're 3 weeks late on the release, it's supposed to be around the end of January. So they may or may not creep that into February. So we're now talking about officially starting the process in November and then submitting in January, and then they'll be awarded in April. And our grantee meeting will be in August, so it'll be good timing. That April date will probably slip, so it's probably, if they say April, we might say May or even June by the time that the final awards are. From our experience in the past, that they generally get delayed. This little delay is not bad, though, because one of the things we want to talk about today is planning and what do we do now before the grant comes out. Now, the neat thing is, by the way, and I'll put this in the notes, there is a version, it's a draft version of the guidelines on the EPA site, and you can download that as a PDF. So it's basically, it is going to change, but it's a draft fiscal 2011 guidelines for brownfields. Now they're calling it the Environmental Workforce Development and Job Training Grant. Used to be the Brownfields Job Training and Development Grant, but this is now, they've expanded it. The big difference is in the old days, up until this year, the money that funded this came from for brownfields, and you had to be training people who were supposedly be working on brownfield sites. And that that definition slowly expanded because brownfields, if you look at a brownfield site, it's usually a fence around it, and it's like most construction sites, there's activity going on, and then it's quiet for a while, and then there's some activity going on, and it's quiet. But slowly what happened is this has broadened to more environmental jobs in the community, and it's broadened this year. There's money coming from other parts of the agency, including urban agriculture and water and, of course, solid waste, which is part of this office. So what they're doing is they're now expanding the scope of the whole program, and it's now environmental job development and training. A question was asked the other day, are there any other EPA training grants? And there aren't. This is the only EPA-funded job training, job development grant that there is. There is another set of grants that are issued by NIHS, the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Those have been awarded already, and they tend to be longer term. They're 5-year grants, and they're more a little more institutionalized. They go to certain groups, organized labor, the grants tend to be larger, and you're going to run across them. You may be familiar with them. We're going to talk a little bit about that, about seeing if there's one of those in your community. Also, HUD has some money for training, and Department of Energy has some money for training. These monies that come out of HUD and Energy, often they're large grants, they're block grants that go out to communities, large organizations. So there's nothing like this that goes to small nonprofits and small group training groups. Some of those ones are bigger grants that go to large institutions, and then the money's kind of divvied up from there. But the real impact of this grant this year is that it is environmental jobs, not just brownfields jobs. So when we talk about the scope of work and what we're going to be looking at in terms of developing jobs in our community, we can include things like stream cleanup, water, certainly brownfields. And within the area of brownfields, we've got brownfields assessment, which is finding out where the pollution is in the community and deciding what areas they're going to assign as brownfields. Then there's cleanup grants where they're actually already done the assessment and they're actually cleaning up the environmental contaminants. There's another program called the Revolving Loan Fund, which is our loans to cleanup grants. It's a voluntary cleanup program that allows companies to clean up their facilities. And that's all under the brownfields. There's underground storage tanks, and that's another big one that did not used to be included. Underground storage tanks are basically your gas stations and things like that. One of the issues that's come up in this before this grant comes out, and to leave that train of thought, that I'll put on the post session notes the URL to get to the draft job training grant guidelines, so you can download. It's a 32 page PDF that you could print out, and it's going to be pretty close to the final, but there are some changes and there's some issues. In going through that, there's a couple issues I see that I think EPA is going to need to resolve. You may want to know in this whole pre-grant process when you're planning. And one is training for things like weatherization and wastewater treatment. Comments are being made. A lot of people are doing weatherization, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't pursue it, because that's where a lot of jobs are right now. But there are two issues that are of a little concern that I don't know have been fully resolved yet. One is that there's been a lot of money going into weatherization, mostly from HUD, but they're going to specific organizations, and a lot of that money has not, in some communities, has not basically hit the road yet. It hasn't. People are training, but there aren't the jobs there yet. Some states have passed some weatherization legislation and have some programs up and running. So what we're seeing is across the country a kind of a spotty activity in weatherization. In the Northeast, for example, they're very busy with weatherization. New Jersey Youth Corps is extremely busy and heavily involved in weatherization, inspectors and installers. Most of your colder climates are involved. As you move to west and south, there's less activity going in that area. There have been comments that have been made that send up a little bit of flags if you're planning your proposal. One is the comment that there's a lot of weatherization training money out there. And the question is, should EPA be doing weatherization training, and particularly under this brownfields or this environmental job training grant? I think if they had their druthers, there's a lot of jobs in weatherization. We're mostly interested in jobs. And if you weatherize, you reduce the need for energy, which improves the environment. So all of those things are good in terms of the environment. So you can make a case for including weatherization training as part of an environmental job training. But it's a green job, but it's a weak link. And I would be careful if you're sitting in meetings and someone say, let's base our whole program on weatherization, I'd be very cautious about that, because it's when you look at all the environmental jobs, it's not the most directly linked to the environment. It's an indirect link. And second of all, there's a whole lot of money from other agencies going into that, a lot more money than EPA has. And EPA would tend to think, well, why should we put our little amounts of money into this training program when HUD and Energy are putting large amounts into it already? So in that evaluation process in January, when they start looking at these things, I think if you base everything on that, you're going to be on a slippery slope. Not to say that you shouldn't include something. And what I would do is, between now and then, we'll watch and see if they not exclude a weatherization, but how the thinking goes in those terms of weatherization. The other area that raises a little bit of a flag is wastewater treatment training. question has been asked, whether or not this should fund wastewater treatment plant operators. And that is a very, very big program that was funded with the Office of Water in 10 and 20 years ago. It was a huge program, it was in millions of dollars funding wastewater treatment plant operators. And I don't know that there won't be more training in that area at some point in the future, but it's wastewater treatment plant operators are environmental jobs, and they're green jobs, and they're directly related to the community. But I would be careful, again, in basing the entire proposal on training wastewater treatment plant operators. There's a big demand for them, and you're going to find in your community. And what I would do on both those issues, and it kind of leads into the next thing, the neat thing about the RFP not going out is regional offices and regional reps are allowed to talk to you about your grant until the RFP comes out. And when the RFP comes out, we're a non-government associated nonprofit, so we could talk about the grant and how to write the grant. But EPA cannot, unless they're in a public meeting and they release to everyone, they can't give anyone inside information or talk about this is what you should do or I wouldn't do that if I were you. They can't do that. So they kind of have a cloak that goes over them when the RFP comes out. So that gives you about 3 weeks. And one of the things we'll do in the post-session notes is put all the regional reps' names and contact information in there. What I would suggest is getting in touch with the regional rep between now and when the RFP comes out and tell them that you're interested in submitting for the job training, the environmental job training grant, and you'd like to talk to them a little bit about them. You want them to know that you're going to do it so they could put you on their radar screen. They'll put you on their short list. Usually what happens is the regional reps, I wouldn't say they compete actively, but when we're at Brownfields, they'll say, well, we had 4 or 5 grantees or we had 10 submissions. And so I think there's a certain pride in developing grantees and submissions from their region. So what happens is we've got the 10 regions and each of them has of Brownfield's job training staff, and I think that they appreciate you contacting them before you submit that you're going to do this, even if it turns out you don't do it, end up doing it. I would touch base with them and call them or email them and tell them you're interested in doing this. If you could tell them that you're involved in the PLC, they might suggest that you get involved in our PLC or look at our toolbox and provide you some technical background, but it's a good time to introduce yourself and then start getting some helpful hints. And this is the time when, as we get closer, before the RFP comes out, if you're going to be involved in weatherization or wastewater treatment plant training, I would specifically ask them about those two issues because you don't want to do something in the grant that's going to mess you up. And so I would do that before they can't talk about it anymore. One thing that people sometimes don't realize is this. Since the beginning of this program, Brownfields, or now called the Environmental Job Training Program, is kind of in flux. And it's kind of changed as we've gone through the years. Each year it's a little bit different. And this year it's a lot different. The grants are still 2 years, but they're going to jump up to $300,000 apiece. And they're going to be 13 of them. They're expecting more competition because as the grant amount goes up, they tend to get more people coming in and because of the economic environment. But what happens on these grants, they have 2 levels of review. The first level is done at the regional office level, and this is, again, why I'm suggesting you contact your regional office. It'll go to, they have what they call the threshold criteria and the ranking criteria. And the first thing they do is they're going to scan your proposal and see if you meet the threshold criteria. And if you're not eligible for one reason or another, you don't meet the threshold. And these are spelled out in the grant guidelines. You can get knocked out before you go to the next step. So that first step will be done on the regional level. So if they already know who you are, and you've already talked to them about your eligibility and what you're doing, when it comes to them, they'll be familiar with you already. So they'll know who you are, and they'll say, "Oh yeah, we've already talked to them. We've been mentoring them, and I think they'll be fine, and they can look through that grant." Then when it goes to the ranking criteria, they won't have anything to do with it anymore. It'll be a independent panel of reviewers who are knowledgeable about the job training programs, and then it goes to the ranking criteria, and they start grading you on every one of those issues that are in there, and they'll give you a point score, and then they'll just the final determination has been made by the assistant administrator of Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response, but they'll go through the highest, and then they'll work their way down. Generally, the highest points will get the grants, 13 highest. I'm sure there's exceptions to that, but that'll be definitely one of the major guidelines that they'll use in determining who gets the grant. So, but what we have here is a real opportunity in the next 3 weeks to do some groundwork. And that groundwork is basically making contacts with people and getting to know who in your communities doing cleanup, and who's are there any gas underground storage tank programs? Are there any weatherization programs? So that you know, if there's lots of those, you may not want to go there at all. Do you have some voluntary cleanup programs? Are there some stream cleanup programs? Or are there some urban agriculture programs going on? And you're going to kind of do a scan, and it's going to lead you into a needs assessment to see what you may want to train in, what areas you want to train in. And one of the issues that is another issue that's coming up is they're going to require everyone in their grants to do three types of training. One is everyone has to do a HAZWOPER. That's the 40-hour waste site training program. If you go on a hazardous, any place they have hazardous materials, you have to have a certificate, a 40-hour waste site worker certificate. So they feel that if you're going to work in brownfields and there's pollution, all the students and participants need to be able to go on the site. So everyone needs that. It's guide 1910-120. It's a very common certificate. The one that's a little more controversial is called RR&P. It's never been required before. They're requiring it. As of today, they say they want everyone to give an RR&P certificate. I'm not sure if that won't change. That's RR&P is it's basically renovation, repair, and painting. And it's for people who are involved in painting, lead removal. It applies to residences built before 1978. And they want everyone to have that training and certificate. It's a little more controversial because there's a shortage of trainers right now. And it's not as where hazardous materials, waste site worker, everyone knows there's a lot of pollutants that applies to, and if you go on a site, there might be something hazardous there. You should have the health and safety training. When it gets to RR&P, which is basically lead health and safety protection, lead is just one pollutant, and where HAZWOPER is many pollutants. So the question is, if you're going to be rehabilitating streams or during urban agriculture, or something where you're not working with painting and demolition, maybe your students won't need the RRP. But right now they're requiring it. So the question is are they going to require it in the final proposal? Well, you'll want to read that. If they do, then you'll have to set up an RRP training program. The third thing they want everyone to do is have some awareness training in these other areas like urban agriculture, water, air, and those will be spelled out in the program. So the three things there, you're definitely going to have to do some awareness training in a variety of pollutants, you may have to do RMP, especially if you're going to be doing demolition work or working with painting or old buildings. And you're absolutely going to have to do HAZWOPER, which is a 40-hour training program. So it's a good time now, knowing that, it's a good time to find out who in your community might do that kind of training.
If I could say something about RRP.
Sure.
I think one of the good things about RRP is compared to a basic lead abatement certification,
mm-hmm.
Lead abatement only lasts for 1 year and then they have to be recertified, where RRP is good for 5 years and it's about half the price.
Right.
But what I found was if you do a 40-hour lead abatement at the supervisor level, you only have to do a 4-hour refresher course for the RRP instead of taking the full course, and they don't even require a test for it.
Oh. So you're
so it's
saying...
Like, it's kind of like you can tack it on at the end of the class and still get the certification.
So actually, if you find someone who's doing lead abatement training and you can do the 40-hour supervisor,
mm-hmm.
then just all you need is a 4-hour refresher. So you really don't have to change your program that much if you've
exactly.
got one of those in place.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing your own lead training now?
We actually found trainers through a community college.
Oh, good, good.
Our almost entire program is being done at MVCC.
Oh, good. And that's a great approach, isn't it? Did you do the scan that we're talking about, find out who your potential trainers were, or did they come to you, or how did you develop this partnership?
We have an environmental tech environmental technician training program through them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we already pretty much had the program all set up with their trainers. We just had to tweak a little bit to fit the actual brownfield job development training guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
So we just added a few more classes, removed some of the ones that weren't necessary.
Mm-hmm. So you're set on RRP. What would you suggest to people who are a little afraid of RRP? I mean,
I'd like to add something because I am a certified RRP provider.
Okay.
In New Mexico. We are a community college, and we provide RRP training all over the state through partnerships with a lot of different organizations. And it's only a one-day class, so it shouldn't be a major obstacle.
Mm-hmm.
There's our program, we travel all over, and it's very affordable. So there's a lot of people that are certified to do it on the EPA website.
Okay.
And we do not have a shortage in New Mexico because we've trained 1,200 people.
Wow.
You know, just in our program with one trainer. So it shouldn't be an obstacle. I think it's an illusion that it's an obstacle.
So you got the EPA certification through your community college?
Or? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you're just doing the worker, is that correct?
We're doing the lead renovator initial. We do it in English, and we also do it in Spanish. We also do the lead dust sampling technician certification, and we are also right now bringing in someone to do the lead-based paint inspector and the lead risk assessor training. So if anybody thinks it's an obstacle, please call me. I'll be glad to. You could sub it out to me.
I'd like to. That was my next thing. This is Rebecca, right?
Jean Marie Crockett at Santa Fe
pardon?
Community College.
Oh, excuse me. Who am I speaking to?
Jean Marie Crockett.
Okay.
And I'm with Santa Fe Community College.
Okay. Would you go outside of your area?
Yeah, we can go anywhere that falls under the national guidelines. There are a few states that have their own programs,
okay.
And that could be a little bit of a problem. But many of those, as long as you're nationally certified, will accept.
Okay. If it's all right, Jean Marie, I'll put your contact information in the notes. And anyone who might be concerned about this issue could contact you, because that there seems to be – of all the issues, that seems to be the one that people, as you say, maybe it's a false concern. And that's great that you're certified. And it gives you you're not only training your own students, but it sounds like you're training a bunch of others, which is great.
Yeah, we work. Most of our training is done through partnerships with home builders associations, apartment associations, nonprofit organizations. So we're working all over the place trying to buy the training. So it's I'm glad to help.
That's awesome. You know, Molly volunteered the other day too. Molly at OAI, when she was talking about the Train the Trainer program they have for HazWhopper. And I believe she was talking about RRP also. So one possibility is those people who are new to this, and if they scan their area, and it sounds like for both of you, the community college is a good place to start, isn't it?
Well, we're nonprofit organization, service oriented, and we're used to working with others.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
so it sounds like both of you are saying to someone who is just getting started and trying and has not done this, you're suggesting perhaps they should go two places: one, the EPA website, and then two, to the local community college to see if they've got some certified instructors for both this and for wayside worker. Would that be correct?
I would say, yeah. If a lot of these programs, try to work with your community college. Don't try to reinvent the wheel.
I think it's become more widespread, too. And, I mean, our college also offers that certificate now, which I just became aware of within the past month or so. So, you know, I think it's spreading fast. I wouldn't just keep looking. I mean, you're bound to find something more close to home too.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the grant, have both of you made the community college a partner, or are you contracting with them? Structurally, how are you doing that?
We're contracting in
mm-hmm.
Utica.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I am a community college, and we're going to be we are applying for the grant.
Awesome. Awesome. And you definitely want to put that in your grant proposal because the fact that you have that capability brings it to you. And both ways, we see two examples. One is the community college is actually applying for the grant, and the other either partnering or contracting with the community college. Each is just as, in some cases, it works best to contract, some pay partner, and sometimes just to have the community college be the fiscal agent. So it works in all those directions. So that's great.
And it helps for the program to become sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right. And, you know, actually how this whole thing got started was the law was supposed to go into effect last April, and they got it. The contractors, I think, got it postponed till about October because of the issue of, well, there's not enough trainers out there, and it sounds like as Glo said, it's spreading very fast, and also everyone who used to do lead, it sounds like it's not a difficult step to move into this if you used to do lead training, and we're certified for lead training. Great. Actually, we suggest that we're going to keep these calls down to 30 minutes, so we don't want to go over. But what we'll do in the post-session notes is put in some of these resources. Rocky Mountain Education Center is another one. Now, that's a university-based one, and they have a huge catalog of all of the train-the-trainer offerings they have. And different OSHA courses that they also put on, and I'll put the link to that, and that would be another resource. So I think what we want to do as we go along in the PLC is keep our eyes open on between now and when the final RFP comes out to look at these little nuances in terms of how we might design our program, and keeping in mind that we're expanding it from to include air, water, urban agriculture, solid waste, and some of these other activities. And pretty much go from there. Anything that anyone wants to add before we go for 2 weeks from now, we're going to have another session, and we'll pick up the discussion then and start continuing about this grant proposal and how we could start preparing for it and going through this process. Anything anyone want to add today? No? Okay, well, we'll talk to you all next week, and we'll send out some post-session notes, and if you have any questions, you can reply to that note, and we'll go from there. Everyone have a good week, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good week.
Bye. Bye.